Lessons from Flight 1549, inside the New York Tracon. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. I'm Paul Plack. Today, in our continuing series, introducing you to the players in the Miracle on the Hudson, we'll reveal what was going on in the New York Tracon, where a 10-year air traffic controller named Patrick Harton scrambled to help the crew of a stricken U.S. Airways flight find a place to safely land an A320 sailplane. Harton's voice in the recordings of radio transmissions sounds cool and professional. Here's his story from testimony before the House Aviation Subcommittee.
Chair now recognizes Mr. Harton for his testimony.
Good morning, Chairman Costello, Ranking Member Petri. My name is Patrick Harton. I have been an air traffic controller at the New York Tracon, and I'm a proud member of the National Air Traffic Controllers Association for the past 10 years. While January 15, 2009 is forever etched in my memory, it began unremarkably. I arrived at work at 12:30 p.m. to begin my 8-hour shift. At 3:12 p.m., I was assigned to work LaGuardia Departure Radar Position. This position handles all departures from LaGuardia Airport. At 3:25 p.m., the LaGuardia Tower controller advised me that Cactus 1549 was the next departure rolling for takeoff. Just for clarification, Cactus is the call sign for U.S. Airways. It was a routine westbound departure off runway 4, traveling due north on a 360-degree heading and climbing to 5,000 feet. I instructed Cactus to climb the 15,000 and turn my attention to another aircraft to give him instructions under my control. I then turned back to Cactus 1549 and instructed him to turn left to a heading of 270, heading the aircraft towards its destination. That is when the captain advised me that they suffered a bird strike, lost thrust in both engines, and needed to return to LaGuardia for an emergency landing. When a pilot tells the controller he needs to make an emergency landing, the controller must act quickly and decisively. I made a split-second decision to offer him runway 13, which was the closest runway to his current position, and turned him left to a heading of 220 so he could return to the airport. I then immediately contacted LaGuardia Tower and asked them to stop departures and clear the runway for an emergency return. While I have worked 10 or 12 emergencies over the course of my career, I have never worked an aircraft with zero thrust capabilities. I understood how grave the situation was. After I gave him his instructions, the captain very calmly stated, "We're unable." I quickly vectored another aircraft that was still in my airspace and gave 1549 a second option, land on LaGuardia runway 31. Again, the captain said, "Unable." I then asked the captain what he needed to do to land safely. At this point, my job was to coordinate and arrange for the pilot to be able to do whatever was necessary. The pilot told me he could not land on any runway at LaGuardia, but asked if he could land in New Jersey and suggested Teterboro. I had experienced working traffic in Teterboro from my time working in the Newark sector, and after coordinating with the controllers in Teterboro, we were able to determine that runway 1 was his best option. It was an arrival runway, and clearing it for an emergency landing would be easier and faster. It also meant 1549 would be landing into the wind, which could have assisted the pilot in making a safe landing. I called Teterboro and explained the situation. The control of Teterboro reacted quickly and paired runway 1 for the emergency landing. I then instructed the captain to turn right to a heading of 280 to land runway 1. The captain replied, "We can't do it." I replied immediately, "Which runway would you like at Teterboro?" The captain replied, "We're going to be in the Hudson." I asked him to repeat himself, even though I heard him just fine. I simply could not wrap my mind around those words. People do not survive landings on the Hudson River, and I thought it was his own death sentence. I believed at that moment I was going to be the last person to talk to anyone on that plane alive. I then lost radio contact with 1549, and the target disappeared from my radar screen as he dropped below the tops of the New York skyscrapers. I was in shock. I was sure the plane had gone down. Less than a minute later, 1549 flickered back onto my radar scope. The aircraft was at a very low altitude, but its return to radar coverage meant that there was a possibility 1549 had regained use of one of its engines. Grasping at that tiny glimmer of hope, I told 1549 that it could land Newark 7 miles away on runway 29, but I received no response. I then lost radar contact again, this time for good. I was relieved from my position a few moments later, as soon as it was possible. I was in no position to continue to work air traffic. It was the lowest low I've ever felt. I wanted to talk to my wife, but I knew if I tried to speak or even heard her voice, I would completely fall apart. I settled for a hasty text message. Had a crash. I'm not okay. Can't talk now. When I got home, she told me she thought that I was in a car accident. Truth was, I felt like I'd been hit by a bus. It took 6 hours before I could leave the facility. I had to review the tapes, fill out paperwork, and make an official statement. It may sound strange, but for me, the hardest, most traumatic part of the entire event was when it was over. During the emergency itself, I was hyper-focused. I had no choice but think and act quickly and remain calm. But when it was over, it hit me hard. It felt like hours before I learned about the heroic water landing Captain Sullenberger and his crew had managed. Even after I learned the truth, I could not shake the image of tragedy in my mind. Every time I saw the survivors on television, I imagined grieving widows. It has taken me over a month for me to be able to see that I did a good job. I was flexible and responsive. I listened to what the pilot said and made sure to give him the tools that he needed. I stayed calm and in control. I returned to work this week, and while it may take some time for me to regain my old confidence, I know I will get there. I would like to end by personally recognizing the captain and crew of Flight 1549 for their professionalism, skill, and heroic efforts of that day. I would like to recognize the professionalism of the other controllers who helped clear the skies and the runways for 1549, as well as the engineers who helped ensure that the aircraft itself could survive landing in the Hudson and that those inside would be safe. Finally, I want to thank my wife, Regina. She has been my rock these past few weeks, as she always has and always will be. I couldn't have survived this without her. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm prepared to answer any questions you might have.
In a moment, a grandstanding congressman seems to think Harton should have seen those birds coming. You're listening to Lessons from Flight 1549, a special feature from AeroNews.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR-22 GTS, Cirrus's premium luxury ride that has come to define Cirrus aircraft as one of the world's elite. Every dream option from supple leather seats to an exhilarating 310 horsepower performance and speed come standard, giving new meaning to the phrase fully loaded. When flying the SR-22 GTS, getting there is truly more than half the fun. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design. Clarity Aloft headsets employ patented Comply Canal tips, composed of soft viscoelastic foam, the same foam tips used in advanced hearing aids. More than simple earplugs, these foam tips provide full-spectrum noise reduction and outstanding attenuation. This advanced technology is lab-tested, proving that viscoelastic passive noise reduction is superior to active noise reduction. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com.
Welcome back to Lessons from Flight 1549. I'm Paul Platt. Sometimes when you have no idea what you're talking about, you really should just stop talking. After Patrick Harton told his story to the House Aviation Subcommittee, questions included these from Representative John Micah of Florida.
Chair now recognizes the ranking member of the full committee who has joined us, Mr. Micah.
Thank you. let me talk to the air traffic controller, Mr. Harton. Now, I'm told that sometimes air traffic controllers dumb down the equipment, the radar equipment, to eliminate some of the clutter. Do you know if the equipment that you had was dumbed down in any way to eliminate any of the clutter?
It was not. I'm not familiar. What do you mean dumbed down?
Well, that you couldn't detect certain objects. What they do is there's clutter in the screen, and I'm
Well, what we can do is we can adjust our filter limits, and that'll get rid of some data blocks,
right?
Transponders, altitude, low aircraft.
But had you adjusted your equipment in any way to...
Well, working LaGuardia departure, we look from the ground up to...
Are you able to ever detect... now, these are, I'm told, Canadian geese, 12 to 24 pounds, and I'm told by the crew that there was a flock. Is that normally detectable?
Not often. Sometimes you can see a primary target on the scope with a large...
NTSB has seen the records and they now have the records.
Scope, yes.
Do those records also record the level at which any clutter is removed from the screen?
Yes, they would have that information.
Okay, so that's with them now. There was not any avian hazard detection equipment at that site, is that right?
No, there is not.
Are you aware of the equipment that they do have that the Air Force and the NASA uses?
No, I'm not familiar
you
with
aren't?
That.
You aren't? Okay. Because I do know that there is equipment. You're aware of that. Had you ever been able to detect on any radar screen any avian activity?
On occasion, if it's a large enough flock of birds and they're at an altitude where we can't see them, we will get what is called a primary target. And that's just basically a dot on the radar scope. There's no way of telling if that's
and
a bird or not.
And you did not see that
day? No, there
day.
Was nothing on
okay,
the scope.
Okay, and we'll find
day.
Out what the... what the screens or what the radar detection was set for. Now, as an air traffic controller, too, you have a limited number of options to send them out of LaGuardia.
Right. It,
and you're aware that for some 30 years, we still have the same routes out of the New York airspace, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. The last 18 years, we've been trying to redesign that. So the choices that for Sullenberger to take that U.S. aircraft out of LaGuardia are basically what's shown up there, the color, is that correct? Those are your choices of airspace exit for him.
Yeah, that looks like a 360 heading off 4, runway heading, and a 55 heading.
But those are your choices.
Those are coordinated ahead of time with all 4 departures.
And are you aware that we're trying to enhance some of the departure by redesign of their airspace? Put that one up there, which would give you a few more choices. You don't have these choices now, do you?
No, we do not.
Okay.
I can tell you right now some of those wouldn't work.
Well.
Just being honest.
But my point is you are limited in your choices of departure. Is that correct?
Yes.
And the design of the airspace is still limited to what was done some nearly 3 decades ago. And my point is that we haven't redesigned that airspace we've been working on it 18 years and we still don't have it. So you have limited choices. You have limited technology. I'm just trying to look at what our options are to make certain that this doesn't happen again or that you have the tools to make certain that you have options, okay?
Okay.
Experience is a key to everything here. Go down and tell me again how much experience for the record each one of you had. Captain?
I learned to fly 42 years ago. I've been at the airline 29 years. I have just about 20,000 hours of flying.
Okay. First officer?
I have 32 years of flying, and I have a slightly more than 20,000 flying hours.
Okay. Ms. Dow?
29 years.
Dan?
26 years.
Welch?
38 years.
Okay, and lastly, Harton.
I have 10 years experience.
Okay, and one final question for you.
Okay.
And this is important because we get a lot of criticism about the aging fleet, or the aging demographics of our air traffic controllers. You're fairly young, but you've got good experience.
Yes.
Were there backup personnel at your position that had adequate experience?
There were experienced controllers around me, yes.
And
I mean, there wasn't a backup for my position. There wasn't someone standing behind me.
But, again, we have to know, were you properly staffed and backed up? Tell
I'm not sure what the staffing was that day, to be honest with you. I don't really
But you weren't going to be, I mean, when you went off, some junior guy that just was wet around the ears was going to take over. That would not be happening, right?
We have one guy that has only about a year and a half experience.
Other would there than be that, any possibility of him taking over?
Taking over for me?
For you.
During the event? Or
well,
just
at
work
any point.
Depart-
at any point.
Yeah, he could have worked departure.
Okay, that's what I need to know because our air traffic controllers express concern about the backup that they have. And I need to know who was there and how we man those important positions with qualified personnel. Thank you all very much. Appreciate it. Yield back.
I couldn't help but notice that during this hearing, there were no public tours being conducted in the chamber. Perhaps committee members felt the need to declutter their screens so they could focus on what was important. Apparently, at least one also felt the need to dumb it down. In part four of this series, we're going to hear from a very professional cabin crew. You've been listening to Lessons from Flight 1549, a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.